Here we are. We made it to the last two episodes of Queer Mountaineers Season 1. This has been an incredible journey to be able to learn and share the stories of members of our beautiful community here in West Virginia. These next two episodes have a common theme, and that is Parkersburg, West Virginia. Parkersburg had a proposed non-discrimination ordinance that was shot down in 2017. The ordinance would have provided protections for the lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and other queer members of the Parkersburg community. This brought the queer community together in an unprecedented way and led to the creation of the first ever Parkersburg Pride. This week's episode is with Emily Harger, a documentary filmmaker originally from Monongahela, Pennsylvania, which is a 2.5-hour drive from Parkersburg. Emily made the trip from her new home in Oakland, California, all the way to Parkersburg to be able to document and share the story of Parkersburg queer community and its resilience. We talked about what it was like to document Parkersburg's story, as well as why it was important to share the story with the people who hadn't lived in the state of West Virginia. Without further ado, let's kick off the season finale and hear from Emily.
So, do you mind introducing yourself and kind of like what you do?
Yeah, so I'm Emily Harger. I am a documentary filmmaker and photojournalist. Currently, I live in Oakland, California, but I grew up in southern Pennsylvania and lived in southern Ohio for a portion of my life before moving out here. And I don't know, I love to tell stories about people, and I'm really inspired by sense of place and trying to tell stories to help people in America understand different places that they haven't been to.
Cool. So you have a new documentary coming out. Is it out or is it like, I don't really know how to describe it.
Yeah. So film distribution is a kind of a lengthy process, and I'm learning that as I go. So the film isn't out publicly yet. Outspoken isn't out publicly yet. But it will premiere at film festivals this summer and throughout the next year. And then I'm actually planning some screenings in West Virginia in the next year as well, but the dates and locations aren't confirmed yet. So I wish I had that information to give you, but eventually it will be available online as well.
Awesome. So Outspoken, do you mind explaining for people who don't know what it's about?
Yeah, absolutely. So, the film follows the story of the non-discrimination ordinance getting voted down in Parkersburg, West Virginia, through the eyes and stories of LGBTQ people in the town. So if you're not familiar with what a non-discrimination ordinance is, it was a law that Fairness West Virginia is hoping to get passed in many communities around West Virginia that prevents discrimination against in housing, employment, and public accommodations for a variety of different protected classes, including race, gender, disability, veteran status, etc. Mm-hmm. But this specific non-discrimination ordinance in Parkersburg and in 11 different communities in West Virginia was adding sexual orientation and gender identity to the ordinance. And so when this law or ordinance came on the table in Parkersburg, the community became very vocal either about how they supported it or how they were very opposed to it. And so the law eventually failed for a variety of reasons. And so I was really interested in what queer people's reactions were to that law failing and to how vocal people who were opposed to it got in the town. And just wanted to tell their stories through their lives after the fact. And from that, I learned that the two main characters in the film, Jean Peters and Kim Williams, were starting a pride in Parkersburg as almost a reaction to the non-discrimination ordinance failing. There's conveniently some hammering going on in my neighbors.
I haven't heard anything, so it's okay.
So I don't know if that's going to ruin your audio, but
no, I haven't heard anything, so
okay, cool.
No worries. It's all good. So why did you choose to cover this particular story? I mean, you currently live in California. West Virginia is a bit of a trip. So.
Yeah, absolutely. I grew up in an Appalachian community in southern Pennsylvania. I went to college in Appalachian, Ohio. really interested in my documentary work as a whole, to help people in America that don't live in that region or haven't lived in that region, to help break the stereotypes that are about Appalachia, and to help people understand, like, the current state of affairs in the area. And so I started this film with the simple question of, where do queer people feel safe in Appalachia? What is that like? What do those pockets of safety look like? Myself being someone who is LGBTQ identifying and, like, grew up in Appalachia, is a very, like, personal question for me that I wanted to find some answer to. And so when I was doing research about, you know, various places all over Appalachia and trying to figure out, like, what's the story I wanted to tell, I landed upon this non-discrimination ordinance that had failed in Parkersburg. And so this was, like, the only community in West Virginia that voted this down. There are 11 communities that passed it. And so that really, I don't want to say it surprised me, because I understand that, like, obviously LGBTQ rights are not as accepted in smaller communities as they are in other places in the world. But I was drawn to that being kind of this, like, abnormality that you hadn't seen in other communities. And when I started talking to people in Parkersburg, I found out that Parkersburg used to have this, like, tremendously large and vibrant gay and drag community. Like, Parkersburg used to have, like, I don't know, every part of town had a drag club, and, like, every weekend there were drag shows, and there were so many gay bars that people could go to. And in the 1980s and 1990s, most of them closed. To this day, there's no gay bars or drag bars in Parkersburg. And so when this ordinance failed, it kind of woke everyone up and made people realize, like, oh, we have to make a space again for queer people in this town. And I thought that was really beautiful, just that, like, rebirth of community that people were telling me about. And I really wanted to document it as it was growing again.
Yeah, that's really cool. I didn't know that they don't have any, like, gay bars out there. Because, I mean, I interviewed about a year ago for a video project the owner of the gay club here in Morgantown. And he said that there's only three left. So, like, in the entire state of West Virginia. And, wow, I didn't know that Parkersburg didn't have one. I kind of assumed that it did.
Yeah, I mean, there are spaces for drag shows and spaces for LGBTQ people to gather and have community. Mm-hmm. But the more traditional, like, the bars that had once existed, like Woodstar and the Other Side, all closed. I couldn't tell you the exact time period when they closed, mm-hmm. but that is a part of the film. The film goes into the fact that, like, there used to be these, like, very visible spaces with, you know, rainbow flags on the outside and people performing drag in the spaces. And now that those spaces don't exist anymore, I thought it was really amazing how the characters in the film took it upon themselves to make those spaces again.
Yeah. So, speaking of the people who are featured in this film, like, how did you determine who you wanted to talk to help put the story together?
Yeah, absolutely. So, just to give you a rundown, the Outspoken is more of a community portrait than a story about, you know, one or two characters. So, in the film, you meet kind of three main storylines. The first one is Jean Peters and Kim Williams, who are a married couple that are very vocal activists in the town.
Mm-hmm. I actually just interviewed them last week.
Oh, amazing. Cool. The second kind of story you meet is this young woman named Ivy Herridges and her two mothers, Montana and Lily. And so you hear their story. And then the third narrative being a man named Ashton Buzzard, and he tells his story about being a transgender man who experiences all of them for a period of time in life. And so I started out knowing that I wanted this to be a community portrait, and I wanted to tell the story through many different types of queer people. I wanted to interview a person who is transgender because a big issue with the non-discrimination ordinance failing was that a lot of people in the town believed that it was a backroom bill, so that, you know, quote unquote, if the bill had passed, then that meant men dressed as women could go in the women's bathroom. And that's just, you know, absolutely a myth that perpetuated through fear and lack of education around LGBTQ issues.
Exactly.
It's very important for someone in the film to be transgender and to be able to tell a bit story and their side of the issue.
It's really interesting. I lost my train of thought for a second. I'll get it back. What was it like to talk to people in this community and to, like, help tell these different stories of this community?
Yeah, it was beautiful. I felt like I could relate a lot to the experiences and stories that I heard from different people, especially Ivy. Talking to Ivy growing up, I think she's 16 now, but she was 15 when we were filming. And just to meet, like, a young woman who is so confident in their identity was really inspiring for me, growing up not being confident in my identity in an Appalachian community. And honestly, I was really surprised and my heart was warmed by the fact that, you know, I feel like this issue is painted often as, like, people of faith versus LGBTQ people, and like this division is painted. And when I met people and met the community, that totally wasn't the case. Like, I met so many LGBTQ people who were also Christian or of a certain faith, and so many people who were Christian allies of the LGBTQ community. So I feel like, you know, there's always this mass media narrative about division that we see nowadays, especially with the Trump administration. And I felt it was really surprising and amazing to, like, be on the ground in this really welcoming Appalachian community and to see such a bridge between people of faith and people who are LGBTQ.
Yeah, that sounds awesome. That makes you really want to see the film now.
I'll definitely share it with you. I'd be happy to.
Yeah, I'd love that. So what have you learned from this experience of covering this community and telling their story?
That is a big question.
Yes.
I learned so many things. What did I learn? I mean, I guess my main takeaway is that nothing is black and white. There's no easy answer to this issue. There's no easy answer to the conversation of inclusion of LGBTQ people in human rights ordinances and the conversation about religious freedom and making sure people of faith feel like they have the freedom to practice their faith in all aspects of their lives. And so because there's no easy answer to that, I think it was really amazing to meet so many different types of people who were all seeking some sort of answer in many different ways. Like for Jean and Kim and the activists in Parkersburg, it was starting Pride to, you know, make a space for people to feel safe in the town. For Ivy, it's, you know, I think she intends and hopes to start a gay-straight alliance at her high school in Williamstown. For Ashton, it was separating himself a bit from the community and, you know, finding his own path as a transgender man in his own way, separate from, you know, the larger LGBTQ community in town. And so I feel like, you know, often with human rights issues, the media tries to paint it in a very black or white answer kind of way. And with Outspoken, I really wanted to show the nuance of the issue. And like I said before, how it really is such a bridge between all these different communities in Parkersburg and everywhere else in America, too.
Yeah, I mean, like, part of the reason why I started this podcast, and I tend to talk about it a lot when I'm recording and one of these episodes, is, like, I kind of want to try to, like, fight that sort of, like, narrative when it comes to being queer in West Virginia or anywhere in Appalachia, like, to I mean, I'm not originally from West Virginia. I'm actually originally from New Jersey. But like, you know, of course, when I was coming here for school, everyone was like, oh, you know, hillbillies and blah, blah, blah. Like the, and then of course the stereotypes around West Virginia University, but everyone knows that by now. But like, it's been, I mean, for me as someone who's been covering like queer issues in West Virginia, I think it's really cool to, you know, hear someone else who also thinks it's kind of similar with trying to show all sorts of different parts of it, you know?
Yeah, you know, I think I often, the phrase I try to use is that people often paint, how do I explain this? I feel like people that aren't from West Virginia or, for me, Southern Pennsylvania, assume that everyone who is queer in a small town is having this tragic life and is living a tragedy that is very difficult and has no joy to it. And of course, while there are struggles that queer people face wherever they live in the United States or wherever they live in the world, like even here in the Bay Area, which is painted as this like beautiful liberal oasis for gay people to come and like live their life, there are still issues here. And so I feel like a lot of people paint West Virginian LGBTQ people as like experiencing this tragedy. And I was like so amazed and inspired by meeting so many queer people in Parkersburg that weren't, of course, living a tragedy. They were living a beautiful, resilient life, and while there are struggles, like figuring out ways to move past that. So I really hope that, like, I really want to see a shift in the way media tells stories about small town queer lives, to show that it's, you know, it's not all difficult and bad. There's love and joy and community as well.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So on that kind of note, like, why do you think that this documentary is important to share with not just people from West Virginia, of course, but people who don't live in West Virginia?
Yeah, great question. So actually last Friday in Oakland, I screened the film in front of a small crowd of people at this event called Video Consortium. And it's a gathering of nonfiction filmmakers and just people from the community that get to come and celebrate documentary film. And so I screened the film in front of a group of people that all live in the Bay Area in Oakland or San Francisco. And so many people came up to me after the film and just told me how grateful they were to have heard this story, because they all, so many people told me that their preconceptions of what West Virginia and Appalachia are like for people were broken, and they really like felt like they learned something new about a place that they had never been to before. People joke in the Bay Area that we live in a bubble, the Bay Area bubble, and that, you know, because it is one of the most progressive cities in the United States, that we got it easy here, you know, and we don't know what's going on in the rest of the world. So it was very important for me to bring this film to urban audiences and to, you know, just different audiences, as well as bringing it to Appalachian audiences, to help people understand what different places are like in America. And especially now with there being such, I don't want to use the word divide, but I'm going to use the word divide, a divide in like the way we consume information, you know, with Facebook algorithms, and we're only being fed what we already believe via social media, mm-hmm. that if there's any way that I can help people understand a different way of life or a different place in this country that they haven't been to before, like, that is a very big goal for me with all the work that I make.
Yeah, that's incredible. I'm so glad that you're out there telling these stories and making these awesome projects to share with people. I'm so excited. That makes me even more excited to see it, to be honest.
Cool, thanks.
Sorry, I sound like such a nerd over here, but I am, so embrace that, I guess.
I'm equally nerding out about your podcast. I think it's really, especially you being in college and making this, I think that's really awesome.
Oh, thank you. I mean, it's taking me places I didn't expect I would be able to go. Over the last year, it's kind of helped me to, this podcast helped me to figure out, like, why I'm doing this. Like, I originally wanted to do it because, like, oh, cool, I've never done a podcast before. Podcasts are cool. And, like, of course, I'm passionate about LGBTQ representation because that helped me realize who I was. And, like, it's just been incredible meeting all these awesome people with these different backgrounds, different experiences, talk about, you know, what they think is important. And the last couple of episodes helped me to realize, like, I'm doing this because there's not enough good representation out there of people who live, who don't live in those big cities where, you know, like, most people think of, like, New York or LA or San Francisco area, Bay Area, like, somewhere in the middle, you know? So doing something like this has just been incredible. It's really been eye-opening for me as someone who isn't originally from West Virginia or Appalachia.
Where are you originally from?
South Jersey area, so Philadelphia-ish. Yeah, so this has been great. This has been such a cool experience, and I hope it helps someone, you know? So I'm going to switch gears a little bit and talk a little bit more about yourself, if you don't mind.
Go for it.
Awesome. Yeah. So what's next for you for, like, after, you know, with, like, Outspoken, with the, you know, film festivals and stuff coming up? Like, what's kind of next for you? Projects and all that stuff?
Okay, we're getting a little personal. So I actually had a pretty severe back injury in the last year, more so in January. So my next project is, like, part-time heal my body, to be honest.
Understandable.
I have so many ideas. Like, I feel like I haven't even had time to think of ideas for what I want my next documentary project to be, because, you know, physical health and mental health are really consuming, and like, I can't really even lift a camera right now because of my back injury, so I've been a bit out of commission. So I wish I had a better answer for you, but I actually don't know what my next project is.
It's totally okay. I have no idea what I'm going to do tomorrow, let alone, like, projects or anything. So So, how long have you been a documentary filmmaker?
So I went to college for photojournalism at Ohio University, just up the river from Parkersburg. And I initially wanted to be, like, a newspaper photographer. And as I learned that the newspaper industry is not such a secure place to work, I saw a lot of my friends get laid off from their jobs. Over the course of my college career, that halfway through college, I picked up a video camera. And the first video project I ever worked on was about an older couple who built their own houseboat to keep themselves from being homeless and get off welfare. And so they built their own houseboat, and they lived on the Ohio River in northern West Virginia for, you know, a couple years of their life. And so it was this, like, you know, abstract kind of story about what does it mean to, like, have a home when your home is a boat on the river. And that was the first time I fell in love with video as, like, a way to tell people stories and interviewing people and capturing audio and getting to see their face and hear their voice. So that was a couple years ago. I guess it's been... Professionally, I've been a filmmaker for 2 years, but I've been doing filmmaking for 6 years now.
So, all right, you answered the next question. I was going to ask how you got into it, but, you know, you're doing great at that. No, I'm serious. Sometimes, like, people are like, oh, they already answered that question. Don't need to ask it. This is great. Saves me a little time there.
Totally.
Oh, my goodness. So, how does your personal, like, history and, like, background, like, help you in telling stories like this, like, Outspoken?
Absolutely. Well, you know, I didn't grow up with a support system to learn about sexual orientation and gender. Really, until my last year of college, I really didn't even think about it as something to think about, unless, you know, I didn't have parents that really understood what it meant to be gay or what it meant to be bisexual. So I feel like I'm inspired by, you know, hearing of people who went through the same kind of lack of understanding their identity as I did. And that really motivates me to help people understand in smaller communities the importance of, like, knowing your identity and being educated around LGBTQ history and issues and sex education. Like, I really want to see more of that and more dialogue about these things in smaller communities like the one that I grew up in. So it really just motivates me to make the work and to help people understand. I don't know.
Yeah. No, that's a great motivator to, you know, be making these films, especially, like, how much work goes into it. You gotta have a pretty strong motivator to get you to do that, right?
Totally. I had no idea going into making this film how much work it was actually gonna be. Because initially I wanted the film to be a feature length, which is, you know, an hour and a half to 2 hour long film. And as I got into shooting and producing the film, that was too much for me at this stage of my career. So I had no idea that it was going to take me, you know, a year and a half to finish this project, but it really has been the best year and a half of my career so far.
Oh my goodness. So what advice do you have for people who want to do what you're doing and tell stories for a living?
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Gosh, you know, there is this amazing speech by Ira Glass, who is that NPR guy. It's called The Gap, or The Gaps. And I think, I wish I would have watched it, like, years ago, but, you know, Google it or whatever. But the gist of his little speech is that every time you make something, it's really never going to live up to your expectations of what you want it to be. You know, like, everyone has a sense of taste in art or media and, you know, a way that they want to be creating something or a way they want to be telling a story. And every time you start a project, I feel like, at least myself, I hold myself up to really high expectations. And I usually don't meet them. But the act of not meeting your expectations means that you have good taste and that the more you create, the closer you are, you're going to get to that expectation of yourself. And the smaller that gap between, like, where you want to be and where you are right now, it's going to be. So I feel like for anyone who wants to be a documentary filmmaker or just a storyteller in general, like, just keep creating work and keep interviewing people and keep, you know, asking strangers on the street what their name is and how they're doing, because you never know who you're going to meet. You never know, like, which story you're telling is going to be the one that has the most impact. And, like, you're always going to keep going. Like, some of these stories are going to suck, and they're not going to be very good. Like, I've made so many films that I look back on, and I'm like, oh, God, that's terrible. But that's, you know, you wouldn't, without that terrible film you made 2 years ago, you wouldn't be where you are today.
It was so great to be able to talk to someone who had a similar goal and motivation to what I'm doing here with Queer Mountaineers. Emily's doing some great work out there, so make sure to follow the Outspoken documentary on Facebook and Instagram. As for the next episode of the season finale, you'll hear from two people who were interviewed as part of Emily's documentary. Their names are Jean Peters and Kim Williams. They are part of the driving force behind Parkersburg Pride. I cannot wait for all of you to hear their stories, so stick around for tomorrow's episode, and it's part two of the season finale. I'll see you then.